But that's not where the power is these days. It's in the distribution network. It's in able to power to market that. And I think it's not just coffee. I mean, Walmart and Amazon, they've got more power than the producers, the people who are making the products that they're selling, right?
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode 2 of a 5-part series where we are talking about how the value is created in the specialty coffee market. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the power dynamics in the coffee supply chain with Ted Fisher. Ted is an author and an anthropologist, and we are having a delicious discussion. The thing, folks, is that I hope particularly, that when you listen to this podcast, it sparks curiosity in you. It sparks, my guests and I never have to agree on anything. We're just exploring ideas. And so that is the epitome of a healthy power dynamic. It's balanced. It's curious. Nobody's married to their ideas. People exploring ideas. And there's this jousting that's going on backwards and forwards. So with that, Ted, tell me, who has the power from your perspective with all the research and discovery that you've done? Who has the power dynamic in the coffee supply chain?
Well, first, let me make a comment on your wonderful introduction there. I wish that the whole world, not just the coffee sector, needs to hear that lesson about curiosity and a healthy society being one in which we debate different ideas based on facts. And
hear, hear.
And we can to disagree sometimes, but that we have a common basis. And I just couldn't let that pass. I mean, I just feel so disheartened these days in so many public decisions in coffee and otherwise that we're just completely, completely polarized. Who has the power in coffee? So it's interesting. You can think about two ways of accumulating value from a I come from a Marxist tradition in political economy and anthropology. Okay. That, and so one way is to, you know, just sort of accumulate as much value as you can. But the real power is defining what value is, because it's a construction, right? It's that doesn't exist there independently of us out there in the world. So it's really the strivers who are trying to accumulate much value, but the people who have the real power are deciding what value is. And I think that the same is true in coffee. It's like we can try and find quality and charge a high premium for quality, but the real power is in who gets to define what quality is. They're the ones who are running the system. And just as another little side note here, I think this applies more broadly to the global economy these days. In Marxist, power used to be about controlling the means of production, what you need to make your product. So in coffee, it would be controlling coffee farm, controlling the land, controlling the input. But that's not where the power is these days. It's in the distribution network. It's in able to power to market. And I think it's not just coffee. I mean, Walmart and Amazon, they've got more power than the producers, the people who are making the products that they're selling, right?
Well, and there's so many more forces that come into play in the different parts of the supply chain these days. When you look at, you know, just natural forces like climate change, climate is having an impact in redistributing where coffee is going to be grown over the next decade around the world. That invites predators into the industry. It invites people who can manipulate the situation. I had a conversation. So last week's series on the podcast by the time this airs was I think I told you the story yesterday of Angela from Colombia, who had used biochar to kind of remove her dependency on fertilizers on the farm, which reduced her cost of production, increased her yield, and it made her the longevity of her plants just out of control. And yet there were forces that are trying to suppress this information from getting out. So when she contacts me, now all of a sudden, in a really weird way, that gives me a sense of power that would have never existed before, that connects me to the beginning of the supply chain before the coffee is even created, so that she can circumvent a whole bunch in the supply chain that allows me to get the story out of what she's done on her farm, which is a weird kind of power and one I take, you know, I don't take lightly, but there are a lot of forces at play, and that's just one example of a natural force that's leading to a whole bunch of different constructs. Then you've got things like venture capital and, you know, those kinds of things. I'd love to talk, given that you are somebody who focuses on markets, talk to me about the idea of the evolving coffee model, given that our economy is running with a lot of energy in it right now that has nowhere to go. So given that there's so much pent-up energy in it, and it is, in my opinion, going to collapse sometime soon, all of this VC money is going to come in. All of this private equity money is already waiting to vacuum up and consolidate. What happens in that scenario? What happens to the power?
That's a great question, and it would be a major power shift. I want to make one comment on the story from Colombia.
Yeah.
It both illustrates sort of these residual power structures that we're still living with, back actually from the International Coffee Agreement days, the power of national coffee associations.
The quotas like system, Colombia, you mean?
They're practically a parallel government, and in some aspects have more power than the
FNC, you mean?
Yes, the FNC. And likewise, in different countries, the power of the coffee association. So you have that old power structure, but we also have this new possibility given to us by the internet. We're speaking by Zoom right now. This is going to be brought, we're on opposite sides of the world, to be broadcast around the world, to circumvent those sometime. It's really hard, though, and the person has to like have a contact and be aware enough of they can like tell their story to. But I love examples of where it works, of sort of leapfrogging the market constraints and the national constraints to get. So I think that there's possibility there as well. On the production side, the consolidation, I mean, coffee, individual large and medium-sized farms get so much attention these days, but the bulk of the coffee business is still run by smallholding farmers around the world who are working with very small plots of land. And of course, they're the ones who were, and the system is very good at pushing risk down. They're the ones able to cope with this climate change, being able to move production, and they don't have the time horizons, not because they're not smart. These are all very accomplished. They might not have the university education that we do, but they're all very smart people. But you just don't have a 20, 50-year time horizon about where you're going to buy land or something when you're a small farmer. At Nestle and Starbucks and these private equity companies that want to sell to them do. So I am worried about that. The specialty coffee revolution, as I would say, it's always mixed, but it's helped smallholders in Latin America. It's been an overall plus. The next phase, I'm not sure for the reasons that you're pointing out.
Do you think that the consumer is going to be the driving power structure behind what comes next?
I so badly want to say yes, but
I'm right there with you.
But consumers do have some power, right? We realize that the market does have to follow. We can't just shove anything down consumers' throats and expect them to take it. Although with increasingly sophisticated marketing, that's questionable. I think we rely too much on, when we're addressing questions of power in the coffee market or in other markets, we rely too much on the consumer. Think about fair trade. Think about Rainforest Alliance. Think about all of these things. Okay, it's on you, the consumer, to change the system. Pay 25 cents more for this bag of coffee and you'll make the world a better place. That's dangerous. I kind of like that on the one hand. I like ways in which markets can be used to further social goods, and I think that they can. I like it that people are willing to express their moral values through their pocketbook. I think that that gives me hope in humanity. At the same time, we can't put all of that. It's just like climate change. Yeah, me keeping my thermostat down or driving a little less, it's going to make a little difference around the margins, maybe. That's not the solution to the problem. The solution to the problem requires systemic and structural kinds of change.
Well, and if you don't mind me saying, saying we're going to charge a consumer 25 cents more so that we can give it to the producer is simply delusional. Why? Because the people who are running the cafes are having the exact same problem that producers are having. They're making, if they're running their business really well, they're running their business at 3% net profit. That's a really well-run business. If they're going to charge 25 cents extra, they're going to be covering their own expenses. They're not flush with cash. If they were flush with cash, they would be able to support a supply chain so that they could guarantee their supply. Right now, cafes and roasters are looking down the barrel of a very dangerous future for our supply chain. And they've got no power to fix it.
I agree. I think that they want to, though, mm-hmm. and this is something we talked about before. I think there is a good intention there, but you're right. Just sort of making those margins month after month constrains what they're able to do. And you've got employees who are right there who you have a personal commitment to, who you want to keep employed.
Who are on minimum wage that they can barely survive in. Like there's just a lot of forces of with, you know, that's another power structure, the power structure between the employer and the employee. There's an interesting power structure that we rarely have had the opportunity to talk about that I would love to talk about with you. And that is the power structure that technology poses with regards to the future of our industry. Right? Like you look at things like AI, you look at automation, you look at robots, and the shift that they're going to create in the power structure of our supply chain. We're going to have fake coffee being something, artificial coffee or whatever the fuck you call that lab-grown stuff. All of that is going to add to a complex power structure that's going to exist. What are your thoughts on some of that stuff?
Yeah, the lab stuff especially is interesting because the moral argument that they make is that this is a way of being climate friendly and reducing exploitation. But of course, if that really took off, and the ones that I have tried so far are coffee adjacent at best. But I would not be surprised if they're able to formulate something.
They'll get it better.
Appealing, yeah. But then you're going to put all these people out of business. And it, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the shift in the drug trade in Mexico, which used to be plant-based. And now
it's fentanyl.
It's fentanyl, synthetic. Which the drug cartels have essentially become big pharma corporations, yeah. Like hiring scientists and renting. But you don't have to have farmers. You don't have to have land. You don't worry about... And that increases consolidation and economic power in a way that nothing else can.
I think that we are in a time when a conversation around power structures and supply chains is way more nuanced and complicated than it has ever been. And there are so many converging forces, whether it's technology, whether it's climate, whether it's economics or geopolitics or logistics, all of these things are all generational stuff. You know, you look at Gen Z and they're like, no, fuck you and your idea of what work is, because we're changing the definition of that shit. It's just really fascinating where we're at. It must be like a candy store for an anthropologist, the moment of history that we're in.
It is, because I think there's enormous possibility, and I do see this in my students, the Gen Z generation, who does see the world as much more complicated, who does resist some of these things that we just took for granted.
Yeah.
Of course, there are two genders. Yeah, well, maybe there are more, right? That's a social construction too. Or, and being cynical about these power structures and seeing the world, as you just said, is more integrated. And I think, and I'm glad sort of that I'm old enough that I feel like now I can leave this to the next generation to figure this problem out. But I do see hope in that, because we've got to change our system.
Yeah,
we've
got to change
for addressing these things. And the best models that have been put forth are all backward looking. Maybe we need a new international coffee agreement. Maybe we need to have new regulation. Maybe we need to have farmers be employees rather than with benefits rather than. But all that is like looking back to a past that nobody really wants anymore either, right? Mm. We want all of these things.
And, you know, folks, if the conversations that we have on this podcast make you uncomfortable, I would just invite you to ask the question why. Because, Ted, what you're saying is that we need to change some things, even though we may not know what needs changing. And sitting with the question of what needs changing, because clearly shit's broken. And it's okay that we don't know how to unbreak it. But perhaps we just need to sit with the fact that before I figure out how I'm going to fix it, I just need to know that I can acknowledge that it's broken and it doesn't fit anymore. And that's not a measure of who I am and how valid I am as a person.
Completely agreed.
Awesome.
And as part of that, the recognition that it's crazy complicated, that all of these are intertwined, as you said. And not having that be that can be paralyzing, right? Oh, man, how can I, just like so many actors and so many players, I don't know how. But finding those cracks in the system, and that's where the optimism of small roosters, of small farmers, of the smaller players, their what we might consider to be irrational optimism, but in their lucky and their better moments, they can find a crack and sort of expand it a little bit.
Yeah. And this is where you've set us up perfectly for our next episode, which is like comparing like with like, the idea that the challenges that a producer faces is the same if you're a smallholder producer versus a big mammoth producer. Or if you're a cafe and you have one store, you have the same challenges as a cafe that's got 55 stores. These two things are not equal. They're not the same thing. We're going to explore that in the next episode. So join us, folks. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.